Well, hello there, and welcome to yet another episode of My Dog Will Eat My Face. I bet you thought I was either dead, giving up, or probably wandering around a freeway somewhere aimlessly. Something like that, at least. But alas, no, I am still here. I have a lot to update my listeners on, and so I'm going to basically have to condense several weeks of time into a relatively palatable podcast. There's a lot to go over. I'm going to do my best. So, it's probably going to sound awful. Because that's me doing my best. No, I don't have that much self-pity. It just makes me laugh. Anyway. Enough for talk. Let's get right into it. Well, let me cut to the chase and end the suspense. I was, when we last spoke, which I have a hard time saying because I can't hear you. But the last time I broadcast a podcast, that sounds much better. The last time I broadcast, I was indeed still in hospice. But I have since then been involuntarily discharged from hospice. I've appealed it twice, and both appeals were lost, surprisingly. I'm not sure what they look at with those appeals, but when I pulled my own medical record, it was filled with inaccuracies and what I would call misinformation that you can review till you're blue in the face. No pun intended in my case. But it's still going to read incorrect information. And that is the consensus of everyone in my family whom I've shared those notes with, and a friend of mine who I shared those notes with. They were all universally flabbergasted. No, of course, this is family and friends. These are people that you might say will take my side no matter what, and you might be true. In fact, none of them at all backed down when I committed that double murder in the late 90s. So they all stood by me through that. I don't see why they wouldn't stand by me through this. But also, they're the only people I would really trust to share my actual medical record with. So my available audience, so to speak, is going to be relatively small. Well, subsequently, I did a very difficult visit to my cardiologist because I'm on 8 liters of oxygen when in movement. And I have to go clear across town. I requested a wheelchair when I got there and had a friend take me and carry the oxygen. And rather than being put in a waiting room, I had to be put in a little room to where I could suck on the oxygen out of their wall and steal it from them. And so anyway, it was a pretty laborious and logistical nightmare. But I did manage to get a brand new echocardiogram done, and I got a clinic visit with my cardiologist, who was also completely shocked that my hospice was not extended. So I guess you could count him as being part of that consensus. The fundamental problem here is, and this is how my cardiologist put it to me, is I am the first recorded case in human history of this particular congenital defect ever happening within a human being. And the solution that was sought out in the lab was the very first fully artificial implant used as basically a simulated portion of the heart and lungs. That later allowed for amazing things such as artificial valves and other things. So I could say in one sense I should be proud. It was the first, very first truly opening the door of using artificial parts to remedy problems within the heart. And it's totally true. There were papers written about it, I've been told. I don't remember any of it, for the most part, because I was a baby. And that first time surgery happened, I think, in 1979, to put things in perspective. So this is even pre-80s, when they were coming out with other cardiac advancements. This goes all the way back to the Carter administration, to put it in perspective. I don't know how else to phrase it. But needless to say, because of that intervention that was done and the subsequent interventions my cardiologist did, and because of the odd way my body adapted to keep me alive as the arteries in my body continued to degenerate and become occluded, it means that my anatomy is, in fact, completely unique. You cannot find another copy of my anatomy on another human being on this earth, as far as we're aware. Of course, there might be some kid running around, you know, I don't know, the streets of Prague or the Savannah in Zaire. I don't have a clue. And he's actually got the same issues as I do. Maybe so. But At least as far as Western medical science knows. And I'd actually say Eastern medical science. I mean, they're not excluded from this either, because they could just as easily refer to these medical journals as anyone else. So as far as we know, I'm the only one. And so the difficulty in stating my prognosis and my status is that I am writing the precedent. I am writing the history as I move forward. So any predictions that are given to me with respect to prognosis or living or dying are off-the-wall guesses. And I've absolutely outlived my so-called welcome on this planet. They've been saying I was doomed to die any moment now when I was a baby, all the way until now. But when I did see my cardiologist yesterday, he explained to me that that's why this is so difficult, to sign a form saying, yes, I predict you will be dead in 6 months or less. It could be 6 weeks or less. It could be 6 minutes or less. It could be 6 seconds or less. We just don't know. And it doesn't help that it's a cardiac issue. Hospice, when it first came out, was designed by Medicare as a way to treat people with end-of-life stage cancer. And when you're dealing with cancer, it's a lot more black and white. And a lot more predictable. I have no such luxury. So this new medical director, who fiercely clutches to her medical license as though it's the Holy Grail, would not dare to take a risk on me dying before or after the next 6 months, and rather elected to just punt me out the door with a good look and a smile. And that's more or less where I'm in at today. I'm not in hospice anymore. I'm not in palliative care either. I'm nowhere. I am just sitting here in a chair making this podcast, with no care, except for perhaps my cardiologist, who has a difficult time caring for me. Because so much of it is just completely unpredictable and unknown. of the pieces of ammunition that this medical director used to justify my discharge was that when they did one blood test, my BNP, which is a measurement of serum in the blood that could be indicative of damage to the heart and is used as a means to gauge heart failure. When that number came in under her tutelage, it was only 97, which is actually excellent and in normal range. Anything under 100 is normal. So technically, if you're not under 100, that means you're not in heart failure. Now, in July of 2022, that same measurement came in at over 1,900. Quite a big difference there, eh? But she used that in part as evidence for my improvement. Well, I got my blood results from the exact same test just yesterday. And now it reads over 1,300. So it's not the highest it's ever been, but it is 13 times over the normal limit and highly indicative of heart failure and damage. So, I mean, realistically, I think that one number that came in, the 97 in between, was something like of a fluke. Something happened there where it wasn't done correctly. Or something happened. It just doesn't make sense. Because now, just a month after that, or so, it's already gone back up to over 1,300. Which, again, is indicative of damage to the heart and is generally seen as a fair measurement of the strain put on the heart. Or damage done to the heart, aka heart failure. The echocardiogram that was also conducted yesterday showed that compared to previous echoes, there was a diminished strength. There was a diminished blood flow in the right ventricle. In other words, it's showing that that has become weaker than the last echocardiogram. So she is completely nuts. Things have not become better. They've gotten worse in many ways. I don't know how that will be told to her, or if it will be, and if it will be communicated to her, or if she'll even care. I think that she is hanging on to that doctor's license so tightly that it is the most precious thing to her, that she won't take a chance on anyone to risk it. And when discussing this matter with my father today, I came up with a great phrase that relates to this. I said, you have to be willing as a doctor to take a chance on some people. And if you in general refuse to ever take a chance on people, all you are is a, well, it'll be bleeped out here, but you will be in a hole. That's all you are then if you don't take a chance on someone. You're not special. You're not a good doctor. You're just a bleep. An A. **HOLE. And I think that should be on a t-shirt. If you don't ever take a chance on someone, all you're gonna do is end up being this. And I would buy that t-shirt, Apple. Because I firmly believe it's true. And even more so true when you are a practicing physician. Every time you see a patient, technically, you are putting your license at risk. You've got to be able to take some risk to do your job, and that is to help people. Sometimes you've got to just say, that matters more to me than this license. She broke her oath, in my opinion. And I bet a lot of physicians do. Now, my cardiologist, going back to him, he did not immediately put me back in hospice. Because the one form he had said, I, as a doctor, certify that I believe this patient will be deceased in 6 months or less. And he said flat out, I can't sign that because I have no clue when you're going to die. You meet the criteria for hospice all around except that. Because this is a totally new situation. And so am I to suffer until I finally see a bright light and hear dead relatives beckoning, and then they can point at me and go, aha! Now we're willing to take a guess on when he's going to die. Oops, too late. I mean, come on. That's how I see it. And to take it even further, my father made the observation that any decent human being would do that, would not allow me to be kicked out of hospice into nothingness. I told my dad the impression I got from her is she didn't care one bit whatsoever about me She never even asked a question about me. She never even examined me. When I saw her, she only screamed about federal guidelines being so risky. Now I've got decades of experience in legal compliance. Your one page of federal guidelines don't worry and scare me. And I just think she's frankly a bad person. She didn't care at all about me, how my body was, or anything. In fact, I told my dad if I dropped dead in front of her, she wouldn't lift a finger. She wouldn't even care. Unless I died right in front of the front door and she couldn't open the door all the way to leave, and now my stupid body's in the way. So she's trying to kick my body or being grossed out of the way so I should get out of there. I think that's the only time she would ever consider my well-being or my body's well-being in any way whatsoever. And that is based on 3 impressions I've had of her in person now. But as Virgil once wrote, the owl of Minerva takes flight only at night. Well, despite all these troubles and issues I've been having, you can certainly tell I'm stressed and quite overwhelmed how things have been for me. And I would never dare say I'm doing well. However, today, that is just the day after I saw my cardiologist, I did get some glimmer of hope. I had already arranged an appointment to see a new PCP, essentially. And it's at a service where they come to you as opposed to you going to them. And it's only available to people who don't drive and can't drive, actually, which I qualify. I gave up driving because I'm not going to risk passing out and hurting someone or killing someone. My God, I would never be able to live with that knowledge. I couldn't do it. So I forfeited that right. But I went through everything in pretty good detail with this individual who did visit. I am happy to say at least, yes, I now do have a PCP again. Yay! But there's more. She is going to put in a referral to the hospice team that also manages these PCPs and expects them to call me probably within a week or just a couple of days and then probably subsequently see me within a week probably. to conduct their own assessment to see if I myself am qualified for hospice without another doctor's, I guess, request or clearance, or whatever. I don't know what the right word would be. The thing that my cardiologist felt he could no longer sign. So, that's where I'm at. Now I'm playing the waiting game again to see when and if these hospice team calls me and visits me, and then wait and see what their analysis and decision is to whether they could welcome me back into the bosom of warm, cozy hospice, where I can at least get access to resources that are not otherwise there for me as a normal person, or even in palliative care, because I just can't afford it. So that's the next thing to happen. And I guess we'll have to wait and see how that happens. It's a glimmer of hope. It's a light at the end of the tunnel. And I just hope it's not an oncoming train. So, folks, there it is. There is my summary, as best I could, of basically several weeks wrapped into a relatively short, palatable podcast. I am absolutely certain I left things out. There's been many downs and ups and sidewayses and other things concurrently with that, but I'm not going to get into all those details because, frankly, it's exhausting, and I would not wish that upon anyone. Me trying to communicate these things on a day-to-day basis with loved ones and family is consistently met with just utter confusion because it's just a wild roller coaster ride, and it's so wild you don't even know anymore what park you're in, or if you're in Europe or North America or Mars for that matter. It's confusing and flabbergasting, needless to say. And I've been absolutely beyond the pale, overwhelmed with these issues. And it's been extraordinarily hard on me. And probably has caused far more damage than I'm even aware of. It's sort of the last thing you would cause to happen to a cardiac patient in hospice. But that didn't matter to this medical director. She has a doctor's license, damn it. Oh my God. Anyway. But I am still here. I am still kicking. Things might work out. Or they might not. Everything is now unknown territory. Tierra incognito. And it's into that terrifying abyss I walk, and only hope to come out on the other side. As they used to say, Godspeed, John Glenn. But alas, also, thank you, dear listener, for listening to this podcast, hearing my voice, staying subscribed, actually, hopefully, maybe. Hopefully no one unsubscribed. And just listening to my thoughts and my words and what I have to say. That is by far the most I could ask of anyone. And I do deeply thank you for doing that. But with all that laid out, as I already said, I've got to go into my abyss now. And I just hope to come out on the other side. Don't panic if there's some static in between where you can't reach me. But I will do my best to keep this podcast at least up to date and going. Perhaps on a new version or new season. Perhaps not. I don't know. Anyway, until whatever it is comes. Godspeed, John Glenn. Godspeed.